From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
He is Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.
That was me practicing on the tuba on the weekend.
A little flourish there to start the show.
I don't know where that came from. In any case, hey, Marjorie. So an American photojournalist and a South African teacher held by Al-Qaeda were killed Saturday during U.S.-led rescue operation in Yemen. President Obama ordered the rescue because of, quote, imminent danger to the American hostage. Again, obviously, this raises questions about the United States' pay-no-ransom policy. If ransoms aren't an option, and if rescue operations prove, obviously, to be very, very risky, what else can we do? Here with us in Studio 3 to take on this question and other international headlines is Charlie Sennett. Charlie's a GBH news analyst. He also heads up the Ground Truth Project, and Charlie was a co-founder of Global Post. Hey there, Charlie.
Hey, Jim. Hi, Marjorie.
Hey, great to see you, Charlie. So as Jim just said, these rescue attempts are very dangerous. This is the second time that the United States tried to rescue this photojournalist, Luke Summers. He was also with another gentleman from South Africa. What do we do? Are we going to reassess our not pay ransom policy? Are we just going to try to keep doing these rescues and hope they turn out better than these two have?
You know, the tragedy of this weekend, seeing what happens when you do react, when you do actually try to go in and free them, revealed the really ugly barbarity of the people who are holding them, which is when U.S. troops do arrive, commandos arrive to try to free these hostages, their captors are going to turn and kill them, which is apparently what happened here. And that just drives home how complex this equation is. I mean, like I keep saying on this one, I don't know. It's above my ability to make a moral judgment on whether it is better to pay these terrorist organizations for a human life or not pay them and recognize that if you do pay them, you're going to be creating a perverse incentive for them to do more of this. And I think I had the unique opportunity this weekend of being with John Foley up in New Hampshire. Just spending the day together.
That's Jim Foley's father?
Jim Foley's father this weekend. And we were talking about this. And a very unique perspective on this weekend. And he was basically saying, look, we have to be willing to negotiate. They say they will not negotiate with terrorists at all. But if you don't at least create some dialogue and some form of trying to resolve this, these people are just going to be killed every time. And I tell you, hearing it from someone as smart as John Foley, who's a physician, who's extremely bright and obviously devastated by the murder of his son and intimately involved in this issue along with his wife, Diane, they've started the Jim Foley Legacy Fund basically to say the issue of kidnap and ransom has got to be pulled out of the darkness into the light and debated anew. Now, that debate is underway. Remember, we've gotten the word from inside the White House that they're going to review the policy. That doesn't mean they're going to start paying terrorists. I don't think they ever will, and they're saying they never will. But the policy has to be reviewed in how you deal with families, how you organize these attempts.
And can they convince our Western allies, other than the UK, to stop paying ransom themselves?
Which seems to me to be the most sensible way to go is
one pays.
Nobody pays. To put the pressure on our allies to say that because, you know, I can't even begin to understand what the Foleys are going through. I can't even pretend to know. On the other hand, you know this better than I, Charlie, from what I've read. When countries do pay, obviously the incentive to kidnap their citizens goes up and up and up.
But it's not happening. I mean, I'm so glad you said that because I understand intellectually what you say, Charlie, and what the president says makes total sense. You pay, then they're going to go kidnap somebody else. You pay. But at least virtually every Western European nation other than the UK is paying. I haven't been scouring every headline. It isn't like you pay and then they kidnap another Spaniard or another Frenchman or what? That isn't happening, is it, or is it?
It's they're certainly targeting Europeans for cash. I mean, they know they're going to get money.
We read that it was increasing before. That was happening before.
There are more Europeans kidnapped than Americans. I mean, that might suggest their marketing strategy.
Well, I guess it does. No, that does make the point. I wasn't aware of that.
So I don't know. You know, this is such a tough one. I honestly think this is one where I get very journalistic, and I hear all sides, and I present them as fairly as I can, even a side that I'm as emotionally drawn to as the Foleys. And they really believe that this policy needs to be thought through because a human life –
of course,
everything.
Do you have any idea? Obviously, you knew Jim Foley for a long time. Obviously, worked with you. Do you have any idea what? I mean, they knew their kid was in harm's way, to say the least. Mm-hmm. Just like your family knows, you put yourself in harm's way on many occasions. Do you know what the Foley's position on this issue was prior to the horror that they had to live through with their
kid? We had the unique experience of Jim being held, of course, when he was in Libya.
Oh, right, of course, that's right.
So, we lived with the Foley family for 45 days. Working very hard to get Jim released from Libya. The difference there was he was held by the regime. He was held by pseudo-rational actors, to the extent that you can consider Gaddafi's regime rational, right? They certainly look rational compared to ISIS. And so we are on a slide down into a darker area than I've ever thought would be possible. And I think we're in uncharted territory. We don't know where we are. We're feeling our way around in this darkness of ISIS to do what's best. And the Foleys are to be listened to because their message is resonant. It's powerful. And I just had a unique chance this weekend to spend a lot of time with John and have a couple cups of coffee and talk about it. And I'm with him that it needs to be thought through. I'm with him that negotiation needs to play a role in this. You have to at least talk to them. And you have to find some way to change what's happening. We have to change the way it is now.
You know, Charlie Sennett, and again, you know better because you know the Foley family well. What I found so upsetting and unconscionable in what they said happened during the time that their son was kidnapped was the sense that they got that they were almost being pains in the neck by keeping
really
after the
point.
Government, that they were treated disrespectfully, which
You are so right, Marjorie. That is really the issue on the table for Washington, that everyone, any human being would say, the FBI did not give clear direction to the Foleys. The FBI was dismissive about many of their very
they
legitimate
concerns. They
threatened
to prosecute them. I mean, it's even worse than being dismissive.
Well, to be fair, they say they never threatened to prosecute.
Who's
the Foleys say they...
The FBI?
The FBI and the White House say, Ben Rhodes said, we never threatened prosecution. The Foleys are great listeners, and I know that. And if they heard them saying, we're going... that's against the law if you do that, they were putting that together and felt threatened. And that's very fair that they felt that way.
Yeah.
What has to happen is a much better, more concerted effort to deal with this in a way that the U.S. government gives more information to the families and does a better job trying to think through an almost impossible moral equation.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, also, we don't need to discuss it again, but they need a better explanation as to why Bo Bergdahl they could trade prisoners for and they couldn't trade money for James Foley. Let's move on to something that's going to happen, I think, tomorrow, the release by the Senate Intelligence Committee of the so-called torture report, the discussion of the treatment of prisoners by the CIA. George W. Bush the Younger, was yesterday on Candy Crowley's show on CNN, and he was asked about this forthcoming Senate Intelligence Committee report. Here he is.
We're fortunate to have men and women who work hard at the CIA serving on our behalf. These are patriots. And whatever the report says, if it diminishes their contributions to our country, it is way off base. And I knew the directors. I knew the deputy directors. I knew a lot of the operators. These are good people, really good people, and we're lucky as a nation to have them.
My understanding is the report's going to suggest, and obviously I haven't seen it, that the public was lied to, Congress was lied to by leaders of the CIA. But the only argument that I find to have any weight, and I just don't know how legitimate it is that it's going to put our current people at great risk of retaliation by other governments. How real is that threat? And if it is it enough not to let the sun shine in?
I think the threat is real, and it's a legitimate concern. But that's always going to be true. And at some point, we have to have transparency and daylight on what was a failed, flawed policy of torture. And by the way, I've covered the Middle East for 25 years. I know a lot of people who are involved in CIA interrogations and who've worked on these and who are absolutely good people. President Bush is absolutely right to say that. They are committed patriots who want to protect our country. And they believe in the Constitution and they believe in what we hold to be true. That said, torture has long been looked at by countries that have lived through terrorism, like the UK, like France, and like Israel, as not the best way to get information. And what this report is apparently going to reveal, and I'm relying on the same leaks you are here, Jim, from the New York Times, the Washington Post, and others, that basically what they're going to say is that these policies were not as effective as the White House was told.
And that's what they lied to the White House
about.
That's
fair enough, but then the White House should be a lot better in its due diligence on a policy as undercutting of what we believe in as a country as torturing human beings to get information. We should have been better about vetting it. I mean, it wasn't like they weren't told this is the case, because the torture that was done of the Irish Republicans by the UK military and paramilitary forces never yielded good information for them. The ticking bomb scenario, as it was put, when you have the attempt to save lives and then you torture people, is there a moral equivalent there to save the more lives? Okay, that's great, except for one thing. You talk to the French about Algeria. Talk to the British about Northern Ireland. Talk to Israel about Palestinians. And you will find out that these countries that have sadly had a great experience with dealing with the ticking bomb scenario and that moral equation have found that you don't get good information when you torture people. That's not new. That was known before they went in. So for them to now say we were fooled is ridiculous. They had that information. They defied it. As this Bush administration, history will remember, they were presented with countervailing facts on weapons of mass destruction. They were presented with countervailing facts on torture, and they chose to ignore them, and they misrepresented a lot of things to the American people and the world when they pursued a policy that defied a lot of the facts and the context and other great Americans who care just as much about the country who thought that policy was wrong.
Are you convinced it ended with Barack Obama?
No. I think that Obama has allowed some of this to continue, and I think that's why this report, if it is truly released in a bipartisan spirit, should spread the blame around.
Well, the Republicans apparently are not signing off on the release. The Republicans on the committee are going to do their own release or some such thing, so I'm not sure that bipartisanship is going to be the coin of the realm.
You know what I thought? You know, a lot of us saw the movie Zero Dark 30 or whatever it was.
Zero Dark 30,
40
yeah.
Or whatever it was. 30, 40, I don't know. But, the, you know,
that's sequel, by
that's
the way.
Closest I've been is watching it in the movies, you know, the torture thing. But I even remember, and then remember there was a big brouhaha because people said, oh, that didn't really happen. That didn't really happen. Apparently,
wasn't it the opening scene?
Opening scene. Yeah. It was really gruesome. And but I remember in that movie, and of course it's a movie, but still, they got the best information from the guy that they tortured mercilessly at the beginning of the thing when they were having lunch with him. Remember? Mm-hmm. They were talking about that's when he turned over the name of the courier to Al-Qaeda. Now, I don't know if that was fact or fiction as it was in the movie, but it was it kind of hits you over the head. They've tortured this guy, and the CIA guy was pretty sick of torturing all these people, he said at one point in the movie. Got the information over lunch.
I don't know that lunch with al-Zawahiri, the head of al-Qaeda, is going to yield a lot of great information, but I do know that that we have to hold true. This is okay. I covered al-Qaeda 8 years before 9/11. I covered it on the ground in Afghanistan. I covered it in Iraq. I've covered it now, and I've covered Boko Haram in Nigeria, Northern Ireland. I've been around this idea of how do you deal with the terrorist insurgency and how do you fight this thing. And my takeaway as an American is that we need to hold true to what we believe in. And we have to stay true, even if that puts us to some extent in peril. Because when we give up on our ideals and we torture people, or we lie about information because we think we need to invade Iraq, and you tell them there are weapons of mass destruction when everyone who really knows, like Hans Blix, remember him?
Yeah, yes.
From the UN was saying, yes. No, I'm sorry, they're not there. The people who knew kept saying this is wrong and don't do it. We as a country need to listen. We need to be bold in the face of terrorism. And part of being bold is holding true to your ideals. And we win with ideas. You cannot fight terrorism with tanks.
You don't think that every one of these presidential candidates, the perfect analogy for me, and this may be unfair, they're for the War Powers Act and needing congressional approval before they go into another war until they're elected president, and then they don't. They're against torture until they're elected president, and then they understand that there are limited circumstances in which it's appropriate. I mean, by the way, I totally agree with you. Yeah. I completely agree with your analysis. I'm just not sure that the concept can be honored. And speaking of honor and speaking of torture, let's travel a little south to Guantanamo.
Yeah, yeah.
As we recall, 6 years ago,
where the torture
president,
happens.
The candidate said, Obama, said he was going to close the place. Well, while it surely isn't closed, six detainees are in the process of being transferred to Uruguay. Beyond the six, is there any sense that we're getting closer to closing this thing? Or is the real problem is that no one, unlike the president of Uruguay, the vast majority of leaders around the world don't want these people? Mm.
These six, from everything I've read and from everything I know about those being released, including the Syrian who's been on the hunger strike, is that this makes sense. There's no charges against them. No formal charges.
Well, are there charges against any more than a small handful,
well,
if at all?
Others, and even if it's a small handful, there are others there at Guantanamo who constitute real assets that were working with al-Qaeda. Uh-huh. And therefore, those prisoners are of a different caliber. And this equation isn't done. And look, Obama was – one of his great electoral promises was, I am going to close Guantanamo, and he hasn't. Now, I don't think President Obama suddenly went to the dark side when he got – all the information. I just think he's realized it is, as you pointed out, this is really hard. When you know the actual intelligence information on these people, you know exactly the threat they pose to this country, and you're inside that information, I'm sure it forces you to think of this game of chess on three other levels that I'm not aware of. I just would hold that we can't give up on who we are, even when you're facing a threat, because when you do that, you lose. We lose as a country, and we have to be incredibly brave and bold. And there are great examples of cultures that have done that before us who face terrorism. And we might think about talking to them more. Madrid had a pretty serious fight against the Basque. In Northern Ireland, how often do we talk to the UK about how they blew it in Northern Ireland for years? And they know that they alienated people and they did things that were wrong, and they've reformed the police in Northern Ireland. They've moved forward. We don't do our history. We don't talk to people. We as a country have to be much better about informing ourselves to make the right decisions. And a good decision is to close Guantanamo. But to do that, you're going to have to find a place to put these people who are...
136, is that how many is left? That's a lot.
I think it's over 100. I've lost track of the exact number. I'm sorry.
And the rationale for the importance of closing it, both from the President candidate Obama's claim to now, is that this undercuts our argument around the world that we are people who believe in due process and don't is that the basic rationale for why it's so important to close this place, Charlie Sennett?
Yeah, I think it is the rationale, and I think it's important that we stay true to those ideals. Let's put it out of business. And you're absolutely right, Marjorie. It's 136 possible transfers in the works this year.
So, Charlie Sennett, you're saying that even though there may be handfuls of those 136 who are really, really dangerous and really, really hate us, that to be true to our principles, we should take that risk of letting them out anyway?
No. I'm saying you have to concentrate down on the ones who are to be charged. And you have to be bold enough to recognize that others, there wasn't enough information on them. This step is a first step in that direction. And we need to keep stepping in that direction. We've gone too slow in shutting this thing down. And you have to either put together the case against the people
exactly.
You have.
Exactly. Try the ones. Isn't that the answer? The ones are the greatest threat. If you have evidence that they are, try them.
Try them, even if it's within the military tribunal and it's outside of the American judicial
system.
But
by the way, in defense of the Obama administration, when they have tried suspected terrorists in civilian courts, they've gotten convictions at a huge rate. I mean, the argument some of his critics say is a lot of the evidence won't be admissible, et cetera. The record of conviction is pretty strong,
right.
No?
It is, and I think what's happening here is a sort of a legal running out the clock. They figure the longer, the slower we go, the more effective we will be in terms of not having something terrible happen, of which one of the people who've been released caused that incident. I mean, that's what no president wants on his or her conscience.
We're talking to Charlie Sennett, WGBH's news analyst from the Ground Truth Project and also co-founder of Global Post. Charlie, I'm a little bit confused. We have this story here about
So glad you're admitting this, by the way. Better you than me.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'll admit it.
I'm with you.
Okay, the United States and NATO are officially ending their combat mission in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I can see why
At the
you're
same
confused.
Time, we're sending 1,000 more American troops than initially planned to remain there. So what exactly is going on over there in Afghanistan?
I don't think you're the only one confused. You've been to Times Square
yes,
in New York City?
Yes, very confusing.
You ever
confusing.
See the shell game played? They're on a box, and they have the beads
That's
under there, and they're
good.
Moving it around.
Very good.
What's the word for this? There's a name of that game.
Shell game.
No, there's another name for what's the name? Well, whatever. Go ahead. I'll think of it in a minute. Go ahead.
We're getting a shell game on the numbers of the drawdown. You know, we have an amazing correspondent, Ben Brody, who is just arriving in the building here for a big meeting about how we're going to be doing our year-long reporting effort in Afghanistan on Ground Truth is going to be focused on looking at this drawdown. Do you know how many times we've delayed starting the project? Because they keep changing the game, right? So today there was this ceremony in which NATO said we're going to cease combat operations.
Right.
This is a change of mission. Yet that whole number of bringing it down to lower than 10,000, we don't think we're going to do that. We're going to actually up the numbers. So they're One shell is a ceremony, another shell is an increase of troops, and a third shell is a change of operation. And you just have to, as journalists, our job is to watch those shells very closely and try to see this sleight of hand for what it is and stay on them. What is the game plan here for getting out of America's longest war, which has produced some significant results? You only have to go see a girls' school or see a new hospital or see the new roads. For those of us who arrived in Afghanistan shortly after 9/11, that country was a bombed-out rubble ruled by a 13th-century tyranny known as the Taliban that experienced a leveraged buyout by a Saudi-funded organization called Al-Qaeda. It was a mess. Great strides have been made that are better for humanity as a result of the world responding to the attacks of 9/11.
Is this new president? We only have a minute left.
I don't want to end on that note without saying.
I think this may be upbeat here.
We got to get out of there.
Is this guy? Okay. Was his name Ghari, the new president? Is that how he pronounces his name? Whatever his new name is. I think we can agree. The consensus was that Hamid Karzai, the former president, one of the most corrupt leaders in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Is this guy an improvement? Meaning, both in terms of how he treats his own people, his ability to stand up to the Taliban, his desire to work with us. What's the deal on this guy?
Well, first of all, there are really two guys, right? So there's Ghani, and then there's also Abdullah.
Oh, Ghani, sorry.
And they are also in a shared power structure of government. By all accounts, we're dealing with a much better government in Kabul to execute this drawdown. You see this when they reach out to the U.S. and say, we don't want you to leave. We think to guarantee some of those strides that Afghanistan has made going forward, we're going to need presence here because the Afghan National Army, which is illiterate, you know, not functioning very well, it's very hard to think of them taking this transition to power without some help here. So I think
sounds like the Iraqi army.
The difference is the Afghan army, the Afghans never really had an army. There is no history. There's history of militias and warlords, but there's never really been an army that was anything to speak of. In Iraq, there was a very powerful army and one that was very well trained. I mean, well trained under a dictatorship, but it was there. The U.S. squandered the opportunity to bring professional soldiers into the fold when it went after that whole de-bathification.
Right.
You remember that?
Sure.
In Afghanistan, you have a different context. You have people who are so poorly educated, they can't read. You have Kandak commanders, unit commanders who aren't even able to read. How do you expect them to understand the counterinsurgency manual if they can't read? So you go on the ground there. And Gary Knight, my partner at the Ground Truth Project, and I spent time about 10 years ago with the Afghan National Army. And back then, it was just ridiculous. Now, where is it now? A little bit better. But you're talking about something that's going to take a generation. Really, you have to think about the next generation in Afghanistan.
So why aren't we going to be told that we need to be training them for a generation? The United States needs to send military advisors.
Or we're going
to
be in the same
train.
Boat, you know, that the school.
I think it's all being thought through right now. I think Iraq and what happened with ISIS, in the sense that we may have left too
yes.
early and we didn't actually think about this stuff on the ground. I think they're reevaluating in Afghanistan, and maybe that's not a bad thing.
So is that the up note that you're ending on? Because you promised an up note. Was that it? Okay, fine.
Maybe we could do a Christmas in all these different yeah. countries.
Okay, here's what I want to vow.
Bells
I want to vow
ring somewhere.
You're not going to be able to honor this, but go ahead.
The week before New Year's,
forget
okay.
about.
Could we do a list of things in one of the really darkest years I've
yes.
seen as a journalist? There are these thin bands of light coursing
yes.
through the darkness. Can we do that?
We'll Season do a band of light show.
Because
yes.
I am not a pessimist about the world, despite the fact that we're dealing with a lot of darkness.
Okay, we'll do our
Thank
Season
you
of Light
so much,
segment
Charlie
right
Senate.
Before the holiday, which will be perfect. Charlie
you.
Sennett is WGBH's news analyst, where he also heads up the Ground Truth Project, and Charlie is also co-founder of Global Post. Coming up, we're going to look at the latest local and national headlines with the Boston Globe's Joan Vinaki and the Boston Herald's Peter Gelsinger. Stay tuned to that on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.